Well, now to tee up our next guests, have a listen to this.
What about you, Terry?
What about me?
Well, you recorded Kicks. It's on your label.
You've got the wrong idea about me, Paul. Much as that van you were looking at, Gary.
550, Paul. I reckon I can get up down to 500.
All right then, Paul. 500 quid.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about it later?
500 quid. And a signed photo of the Shangri-Las.
That was from the film Good Vibrations, which I think is one of the best movies recently made in Ireland. It was released last year and it tells the story of the legendary godfather of Northern Irish punk rock, Terry Hooley, a man with the audacity to open up a record store in the heart of one of the most no-go parts of Belfast right at the height of the Troubles. Terry joins me now from that very city, along with screenwriter and novelist Glenn Patterson. Terry, I saw the movie. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Did you really say those lines? New York has the haircut, London has the trousers, but Belfast has the reason.
Allegedly.
Well, did you say it as well as it was said in the film? Because my God,
probably with more passion than you've just said it. Yeah, I really believe that. I really believe that at the time. Well, I still do, actually.
The movie, I mean, I know somebody said to me, of course, that you might well be the first businessman who we've had on the programme, or a business owner who has had a movie made about their life. But I think myself, I think that it's not about business. It's a way of life.
Yeah, it is a way of life for me. It's a way of life for me. It's going to kill me. Or I thought that many years ago. I was sort of forced into the situation of setting up a record shop because I used to work for Kodak. And one night, three gunmen tried to grab me into a car as I was leaving Kodak. And I thought, right, what am I going to do? I've been passionate about music all my life. I grew up in relative poverty, and the only great thing that we ever had was a big radio. And I just loved listening to Radio Luxembourg, Radio Athlone, Radio Moscow, anything. And I just was mad about music. So I've been doing DJ since I was 15, on and off. And I just really, really thought, before they kill me, I want to do something with my life. And then I set up the record shop on 40 pound. I thought, well, what have we got to lose? And then I set up the record label, because as an old hippie, I went down and heard these punk bands and fell madly in love with punk. I thought, this is my hippie's revenge in the world. You didn't listen to us in the 60s. Look what you've got now, punk. And I really embraced the punk ethos. And I loved the anarchic attitude of the children. The children to me, that were there, you know, I mean, didn't want to be part of this whole sectarian battlefield that was Belfast. And I put out the first record and it didn't do very well, but we sold loads in the shop, put out the second. The fourth one, of course, was Teenage Kicks, which is practically the anthem for Northern Ireland now.
Well, from your point of view, because when one looks at the movie, one of the things which strikes a person watching the movie, firstly, obviously, it's about your life, so it's different for you, but it's that in a period when things were so grim and bleak in Belfast, that it is such a feel-good movie, which probably reflects your own outlook and philosophy on life.
Well, those were dreadful times. I'd lost a lot of friends. Many of the local bars that I drank in had been blown up, and a lot of us didn't go out of the house at night. It just got to the point where it wasn't safe. I mean, you'd be hugging somebody outside a bar and they'd be killed. I mean, it happened to a lot of friends of mine that were killed on the way home. So we listened to John Peel a lot, radio, and that's where I met John Peel in the 60s and stuff, but it was just a really horrific period. I mean, Belfast was so colourful. When I grew up in the city in the 60s, there was 80 to 90 clubs in and around the city where you could go and hear live music. It was huge ballrooms. It even opened up at lunchtime sessions during the week. And then Belfast became, in the 70s, so black and white. And it was really a scary place. And one of the things that we used to do with our bands, we used to love to go to Dublin and play gigs in Dublin and get over the border. And we were living in hell, and everybody in Dublin seemed to be living in heaven. And we used to ask the Dublin bands to come up and play in places like the Harp Bar, but none of them would ever come. It was like there was a Berlin Wall between the north and the south. And we did a Good Vibrations tour, which we organised on £80 way back in 79, which is now legendary. And we took it all over Ireland at that time. We just wanted people to hear our music and let people know, not only in Ireland, but in the rest of the world, that there was something else happening in Belfast other than bombs and bullets.
Well, obviously something else is happening in Belfast when one looks at the movie. Your own life was happening in Belfast. And I'm wondering to myself, like, if somebody takes over your story and goes away and makes a film of it and puts it on the big screen, now you're an observer of somebody else's treatment of your life. What is that like? What did it feel like when you were watching that for the first time? Were you nervous?
Well, I was. I mean, in fact, I was one of the last people to see the movie. But the fantastic thing was, Glenn, who's with me this morning, I mean, the movie would never have been made if it hadn't been for Glenn. Glenn and I knew each other. He'd been a customer in the shop. And one night I was working late. I got a lot of records and I wanted to get them all out. They were like little children to me. Have them all out in their right sections, nicely priced. And then I called into the Crown Bar in Belfast for a cup of tea. And Glenn was with, I think he was with a couple of producers from RTE. And he called me over and they started asking me about my life. They started asking me what it was like growing up in Belfast in the 60s and how I'd kept my sanity. What sanity, I thought, during the Troubles. And Glenn went away and came back 3 days later and he said to me, you know, I can't get that conversation out of my head. I think it would make a great movie. And I went, yes, Glenn, right. You know, because people are always coming to me with ideas. And I didn't think much more of it. And then Glenn got a treatment. And then Glenn got two offers to make a movie from actually two companies in the south of Ireland. And don't be taking this personally. But, I mean, I just didn't feel it. We need the Japanese, the Americans, the Germans, or people from the south of Ireland telling our story. We should be able to tell our own story and we should be able to make our own movies. Because I'm fiercely proud of being born in Belfast. I just don't like the bigots and the races. But I love this city. Guy Lightbody out of Snow Patrol says, I live and breathe this city. I love this city. I don't want to live anywhere else. And I love the changes in the city. But we just couldn't have a lot of people come in and tell our story. And everybody, a lot of the people who worked on the film knew the story from the beginning of the shop, etc. And everybody was quite passionate about the story. And a lot of people worked on the film for a lot less than they would have got working on other films because they wanted that story to be told. And we had a fantastic team. And it was a team from all over Ireland, which was brilliant. I mean, a lot of designers and people from down south. We filmed in the south as well. We filmed in Dundalk. We got money from the Irish Film Board. We got money from Northern Ireland Screen. I mean, the movie was stop go. I mean, it really took 15 years to get it out there. Well, I never thought I'd be alive to see it, actually, at the end.
Indeed. Glenn Patterson, that was a big responsibility you were taking on, obviously, making a film about a friend.
Well, you know, it is such a... Terry is a storyteller. I think that's one of the things that anybody who's met him, and indeed anybody who's listening to him for the first time today on the radio, will know about him. He's a great storyteller. And the stories that he has to tell, Terry has a way of telling stories in which he might feature, he might even be the central character, but he's never the hero of his own stories. And I admired that. He's a very selfless person, so I just thought he had, through his life, there was a way of saying something about this place in that period in 1970s, 1980s, and indeed back in the 1960s when he was in his teens. There was something about an alternative history of Belfast, and also about the way that human beings react or may react at times of great stress and strife. So I just thought there was always something about his story, and the night we sat down in the bar and had the chat. For the first time, I wrote novels. I'm a novelist. I have a novel just come out. I think of myself always first and foremost as a novelist. Never thought about a film until the night I sat with Terry. And I heard this and I thought the only way you could do justice to what I just heard was to make a film. And I went away so excited about that, and then I thought, how?
Well, one of the big things, of course, Glenn, is if you're going to make a film about somebody who you know very well, you've got to be very careful about who you're going to get to play his part.
Oh, well,
Michael Fassbender was in the frame for this part.
This I've been told that Michael Fassbender had been considered. I mean, one of the things with film is that big names attract big money. I knew very little about this whole process when I began. I still don't know very much at the end of it, but I've been told that. That the bigger the name you have attached to it, and the better chance you have of attracting money. At a very early stage in making this film, I should say I co-wrote the film with Colin Carberry, a friend The film would never have, I'd never have managed to write it if I hadn't got talking to Colin and discovered that he had the same interest in Terry and in that time and was keen on trying to do it. And then very quickly we got some other people involved, David Holmes, producer, soundtrack composer, Glenn Leyburn and Lisa Barris-Desaad, the directors, again, both from Belfast. And at an early stage, we were offered some money, but the condition of the money was that we would film a couple of scenes to show that the directors, who were fairly unknown, were competent. And so at very short notice, we had to get somebody to play Terry Hooley. And we went to a friend. We went to Richard Dormer and asked him if he would do it. And from the moment he put on Terry's overcoat, Terry's overcoat is practically a character in the film. As soon as he put it on, he was Terry Hooley. And from that moment on, I think for everybody in the film, there was nobody else who could actually play the part. And
he was absolutely brilliant in the part.
Oh, he's amazing.
He really, really was.
I mean, when we were listening to that clip there, it was very hard to distinguish. I'd been talking to Terry while that was playing, and it was very hard to know where Richard Dormer ended and Terry Hooley began. Frightening prospect, actually, the two of them.
Glenn, you mentioned the money. The original budget I heard was $5 million, the estimate of how much it would cost to make the movie, but you had to make it on $2 million.
Yeah, we did. The budget, again, because it was a period piece, it's set mainly in the 1970s, that instantly demands a certain budget. Because it's a music film, there are rights to be bought. So again, that and Colin and I, when we were writing the script, because we didn't know any of this, practically every scene, we had written a song into it, either a live band or else something on the radio or Terry in the shop putting on a record. And so all of that costs money. And for a variety of reasons, I think with film, lots of money can be promised, but unless it all comes together at the one time, none of that money exists. And we got very close to the big budget that we were hoping for, the bigger budget. Some of that money evaporated, and we were left with trying to contemplate not making the film or making it on a smaller budget. And we wanted to make the film. The producers and the directors sat down, looked at the script, and asked us to make some changes to make the script affordable to shoot, which we managed to do. And I think budget... On the budget we had, I think they made an extraordinary film.
Which is amazing. Terry, on the extraordinary film, how many times have you watched yourself in this extraordinary film?
I've watched it 33 times.
33
in
times?
In fact, the best time I've ever watched it was in March last year in Moscow for Irish Week. It got a sort of 10-minute standing ovation in Moscow, and I knew then that the movie was going to travel. It was just amazing, and I've cried every time I've seen the movie.
So I presume it's an emotional movie for you, because it's an emotional
it is very
movie
emotional
for anybody
movie.
Else.
I mean, one of the sad things about the movie is that I lost so many friends during the Troubles, and recently even. I lost so many friends on this journey that, you know, and it is very emotional for me, so it is. But, I mean, the thing is that a lot of my friends now say that my grandchildren or my children really love the film and they wish they'd been born in the time. No, you wouldn't have wished you were born. I think it's just the excitement of the live music scene and stuff in Belfast when there was no live music scene. And, you know, nobody was coming to Belfast. I mean, there is homage to the Miami Show Band in the movie when they were blown up in the north and
indeed,
stuff like
is.
That. I mean, there's a lot of scenes in the movie which people don't think that really happened. I mean, there's a scene where we're stopped and the army, for instance, started asking all the kids where
indeed,
they're from.
And indeed, they let you through, indeed.
Well, comes from Henry MacDonald, the editor of the Observer's book. I mean, Henry was a punk in those days.
Okay.
You trying to chase us off the air here? I can hear you. Trying to get in there, aren't you?
I tell you, what did they
you
say?
Let him start.
What
was
is
the problem?
They,
no, I think you were on too long there, Glenn.
They say cut. Isn't that what they say when they're making a movie? We're going to have to cut it there anyway. Yeah. Terry Hooley and Glenn Patterson.
I mean, actually, it's a great surprise for me. It's the worst businessman in Ireland that I was actually on the business.
Yeah,
that's a great honour.
We better leave it
worst
there. Thank you both very much. It is a great movie, Good Vibrations, and I hope many people take out the DVD or find some way to see it. That's all we have time for this week. We want to say a special thank you this morning to everybody here at Film Base in Dublin's Temple Bar for hosting us and for their hospitality this morning. We'll be back again at the same time next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Electric Ireland, providing excellent customer service for our growing SME sector.
The Business, presented by George Lee, is an Old Yard production for RTE Radio 1.